Adaptive Architecture, Episode 4. I'm Jen Geppinger.
I'm Kevin Batchelder.
And I'm Jay.
Tonight we will be discussing the fourth episode of Dollhouse from Season 1, titled Gray Hour. And everything is blue sky.
Blue skies.
I was very excited to actually watch this one.
Yeah, this is not, it's not a high visibility one in terms of something you see a lot of people mention or comment. So it's kind of, when you go back on a rewatch, it's like, yeah, oh yeah, that's right. That's an early season one episode. Kind of fun one to go back to, or, you know, just the three of us tonight. We don't have a co-host, but it's funny. We were just talking about looking at our list. We should have co-hosts for every episode remaining in season one and almost all of season two. So you'll have some other voices in here from time to time, folks, too.
Yeah, I was a little shocked that this episode didn't get a co-host, because I think if you were giving me an opportunity to do any of the Fox Five, this was my favorite. And so I think it has a lot of layers in it, especially for, you know, that first five episode block. So I'm ready to talk about it.
Agreed. It was one of the ones that, as you said, it had a lot of layers. And I think it was when we started to see more and more of what the show was going to be, or where it could go, and how it could be so many things in one episode.
Exactly, the questions it could ask you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep, it definitely was. I must admit, though, the opening scene with Echo as the midwife still kind of catches me off guard. You know, WTF, I mean, you know, okay. Took a couple of watches of this episode before I realized how it tied in a little bit towards the end. But otherwise, I'm like, okay, where is this coming from?
I have a question about this mountain house. I'm so confused with this throughout the entire series. The mountain house. A, is she referring to the house that she's a midwife in the beginning? Or B, is she referring to that house that... Because she mentions it later, I think, in Needs, maybe. At the end, she talks about a house that she needs to get to in the mountains. And then I think you even see a glimpse of some kind of snow and things in the attic in season two. So what mountain house is she talking about? Do we have any idea?
Short of opening up the Dollhouse Wiki, I'm not certain myself. I think on rewatches, I tend to think of this opening part here.
Uh-huh.
Because also, as we know later in this episode, when after she's been wiped and they're looking at the paintings, she starts talking about the snow and the mountain and all that. So I tied them together, but I'm not certain if that truly is what they're talking about.
And I never thought it was, and I don't know why. It seemed like it was bigger than just that opening sequence. And the way I always tied, well, I can't say always. I think this time what it finally dawned on me, the reason the opening sequence tied into the rest of the episode was the whole idea of being born. And they're talking about, you know, when she's remote wiped, it's like being born, and it's painful and it's scary. And you know, there's no comfort in where she's at now. And that was the only really connection I ever saw between them. But I know what you mean about they keep bringing back this mountains, house in the mountains thing.
Yeah. And she always talks about we're safe or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I got nothing.
So yeah, that
we'll have to wait. I think maybe when we get there further, or we'll rely on many of you who are listening, and it might be yelling at your MP3 player.
Exactly. I'll email Joss Whedon and see what he has to say.
This would be a good chance to plug our Facebook group or our email to let us know if we've totally screwed that up. We'll give all those details as always at the end.
Please don't yell at me.
Now go ahead, yell at me.
As long as it's directed toward me, huh?
And just for that, now it all will be directed towards you.
Oh, yes. To Justin. Thanks.
But along with that midwife scene, also fairly early in this episode, too, we've got the, quote, reveal, for those who haven't watched the unaired pilot of the Victor doll, if you will, since he and Echo and Sierra have that scene of eating and the whole Topher and Boyd man friend bison discussion.
They're a little bit bison. Well, now, it was actually revealed last episode so that he was a doll, wasn't it?
Yes.
During stage fright?
Yes, it was.
Oh, all right. Well, okay.
I think it's kind of like the reminder.
Yeah, with them all back in the group.
I think this was the reveal if you had just seen the unaired pilot. That was his reveal when he was sitting at the table, you know, eating broccoli or something.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. That's, I must admit now, by the time I got the unaired pilot back in the rewatch rotation, I get a little confused what's where. So,
and well, it's another reason that I know we discussed this when we watched the unaired pilot, if this should be, if the unaired pilot should be watched first or after. And it's, as I've been doing the rewatch, I've been thinking more and more, it really needs to be watched after, because I know even I'm sitting here going, okay, wait, that was in the, wait, no, that was.
Yeah.
You're like, why is this happening again?
Yeah.
Didn't I already did I just glitch? Okay, let's go.
I have to say, I enjoyed the doll state more in this episode. I think Eliza and everybody are settling a little bit better into acting in the doll state, because I know all the actors talked about when they first started was not really knowing what they wanted the dolls to be like and how to play them. And I think in this episode, I really got into it a little bit better, especially with Eliza as far as her doll state performance.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Best line ever. Where are the bedrooms?
Yeah, no, her definitely during like the remote wipe, I thought she did that really well.
Yeah, that was a real scary thing, actually, this early in the series to realize that that could happen too.
I love Topher kind of freaking out, like his hysteria that someone's better than he is. You know, it's like his panic. It's like, I'm not God. What?
Oh, yeah.
And can I throw out? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, I was just going to say, Ivy.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Ivy, yes. That's what's really great about that is the whole juice box thing, the whole start of all that. yeah, it is. It's pretty fun watching him get totally panicked about that and her just watching him bounce off the walls.
It was fun to see somebody ground him a little bit. You know, it was. I mean, as much as he's all like, yes, I must break you down to build you back up. And she's like, hey, look at the monitor. Bad stuff.
Yeah, I think a couple of people mentioned in our Facebook comments, which we'll touch more on near the end, the whole idea that this was kind of also a chance for us to start to see Topher get knocked down a notch or two and get a little more human, shall we say.
Exactly. He's always been kind of the confident jackass in his abilities. And here you see him in that hysterical panic, like, what has happened, who did it, and how are they better than me?
Yeah, and how is that possible to even happen that way? Exactly.
I just love that throughout the reiterating through the whole time, it's not my fault.
Yeah, he does, he's very good at pushing the blame somewhere other than himself, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
That's Topher, you gotta love him.
Yep. Now that introduction of Taffy was quite, you know, eye catcher, I gotta say.
I leave that one to the boys.
Eliza Dushku. I mean, she has broken out the leather pants. And you know, I mean,
well, not the last time either.
Exactly. I love the whole scene as she, you know, fills up the vault door and the Bonnie and Clyde speech. And I mean, this is just a character that Eliza just sails right through. She, you know, I mean, this is the kind of character that she does. And I love the little ode to faith, I guess you could say, with the blue skies. And I like the Taffy character. I'm a fan.
Definitely,
Yeah. And a good point about the faith, kind of the nod to faith. Because the first time I saw this and she's all blue skies, I'm like, oh, that's so 5x5.
Exactly. I think every Whedon fan was like, yes.
That my other favorite from line for her is the whole Taffy standard time.
Yes. And I love after she breaks, he was like, 5 minutes ago, we were on Taffy standard time. And now she's in the corner in a ball rocking up and down. Like, what has happened?
Yeah.
I liked the Bonnie and Clyde. They also got dead. I'll pass on that.
Yeah, I'll pass on that. It is. It's just some really great stuff. I mean, it's a great way to also see the idea of the engagements, as we said, sometimes being, you know, let's face it, illegal. You know, that when Adele's talking early on about the, we don't really know what the engagement are, but it's been flagged by the computer system, and, you know, they got to pony up a little more money, and it turns out they got this whole ruse going to get in. So it's like, ooh, okay, we're not just doing, you know, humanitarian things here.
Well, and I think this was a good episode to show You know, a lot of people had trouble with why would these people really go to the dollhouse for some of these engagements, or why would they really use the dollhouse when you have other means that are probably a lot cheaper? But exactly. But hey, you know, people, if they have the money and it's an ultra elite organization, they're going to go here. You know, other normal people can't get to this. But I think this episode did a good job to show, at least with the taffy portion. I mean, you're not going to be able to go to general means to, you know, hire a, I guess you can hire a thief, but I don't know how that works. I'm not into the thieving crime, but I liked it. I thought it was a good reason for them to go to the dollhouse.
What's a better need for a doll than have, you know, come in, have the best thief in the world or the best safecracker in the world that you don't have to worry about, you know, getting caught, you know, them squealing on you later.
Exactly.
You know, they won't know about it.
Exactly. Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, again, they get wiped. I mean, these people don't even really exist if they ever happen to get caught. So, you know, a lot of upsides as far as that goes.
I have a question because I have a little Deechin-like minaret. So what do y'all think of Deechin as Taffy?
Here's my thoughts on that. First off, it's great that we realize that two different dolls can be imprinted with the same imprint. Mm-hmm. And that was a cool concept to see here. Mm-hmm. But her character is such a different Taffy. I didn't know if that shows us too, and maybe I'm overreading into it, that each doll can bring their own personality or a different personality to an imprint. Because it's, to me, similar but still radically different than Echo's Taffy.
Yeah, didn't get quite the kind of almost carefree aspect to it, but in that same vein, when we look at what's happened now, Taffy, this, you know, Deacon's Taffy is was robbed of a gig. It was given to somebody else who's botched it, and now she's got to come in and fix it. Mm-hmm. So it's not the Taffy that's coming in to do the job. It's the Taffy that's a little ticked that, you know, now she's having to come and save the day when she's already spent all this time planning the perfect heist. And so I think she's almost a little more smug, a little more self-righteous, and, you know, a little more money grubbing because she's been slighted, I guess. And that's where I read the difference from.
Definitely, definitely. And I love Deechin. She's one of my favorite actors in Dollhouse. And I think the Kiki in season two worked better. I mean, just because, I mean, Inverse Kiki's hilarious. But I think it works better as far as they were like the exact same character, just in two different bodies. But the only thing I have with Deechin is I think, and she said it before, is that with her face, they always cast her in these sort of bitchy roles, as she said. And I think she does so much better to me when she's in a role like in Stage Fright, or she's in a role like Haunted, or she's in, I don't know, sometimes I just, it's the same thing with Being Human that's on right now. I love her, but sometimes in these sort of like ultra sexy badass roles, sometimes it just doesn't. She's almost so sweet and kind, it doesn't work for me. I don't know. Could just be me, but there are people
that
out there.
Sense.
There are people out there that say this, and they may not say it on a podcast or say it on Twitter, but they think it. I've found them. And I love Deechin. I'm not talking bad about Deechin. I love her. I mean, she's a great actress. But I think she does better in a different type of role.
Well, at the risk of sounding very shallow, but also since I love to be honest with you folks, I got to say the leather outfits do distract me, so I'm not sure.
Like, look at the kitty.
Yeah. So I'm not as focused maybe on that much detail. I got to give you a lot of props, Jay, for being able to do that. But okay, but no, I'm trying to think out loud, and I can kind of see that. But I like you said, Jen, I think the fact that since this was presented to this Taffy with what's happened, she was a little more reserved. I didn't see it as a badass so much as just, like you said, very, very by the numbers. Okay, you've only got this much time. You know, her knowledge was helpful mm-hmm. rather than her personality. Maybe the Echo Taffy would have had this same type of stuff if she wasn't dealing with the three guys trying to get them all to focus and get her get her job done too.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting take. Hadn't really looked at it that way, I got
to
say.
It's mostly due to being human that I'm doing this rant, but it also kind of floats into Dollhouse.
No, it does. You're right there. It's always the thing with the actress, which I think is part, without going too far down this rabbit hole, for the concern some people had about Eliza doing the doll thing. Some people have already seen certain actresses or actors in a certain way, good or bad, and they have such a hard time seeing them in something else, mm-hmm. regardless of whether or not the performance is top-notch or not.
Absolutely.
You know, we all bring our own baggage, good or bad, sometimes to some of those visions.
Very true.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know how many times Kurt and I have watched something, and a particular actor will come on, I'll be like, oh, he's the bad guy. And because he always plays a bad guy, and then he's not the bad guy, and then I'm ticked. I'm like, shenanigans.
But he's evil.
Didn't they see him in such and such? Now, one of the other stories weaving in here, naturally too, is the whole Ballard coming home from the hospital, and the Lubov, you know, coming in on him. You know, we got to see a bit here of Ballard really being, you know, a real hard ass here. I was a little surprised first time around that he didn't end up doing something for Lubov.
I agree. And I think what it showed at this point, because I remember back in the day too, just kind of like, wow. And I think for me, what that signaled was, okay, he's done playing around and he's ready to do whatever it's going to take to find the dollhouse, because it's bad enough that his career at this point is a joke, but now he's been shot. You know, he almost died because of all this. And a lot of it has to do because of this joke of a, you know, CI, Lubov. And at this point, he's like, look, if I can find out more about your dead body than I can by, you know, helping you out, so be it. I think he's just done.
Yeah, poor Ballard, he gets shot a lot, so I don't blame him for being a little hostile.
Yeah, through the whole course of certainly the first season and more, I mean, this guy gets so mentally and physically abused. it's something, but I mean, I do recall from the first time through thinking, wow, this guy's really he's down there. I mean, he's going to do this to, you know, his informant and you know, make like he's helping him and then not even offer to do it and everything else. It's
yeah, he has a lot of morally gray blocks in the first season, I think. A lot of things he does are a lot of choices he makes you wouldn't necessarily expect him to make, especially from like the first couple episodes. I think his character definitely goes down a different path than you would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely not the goody-goody cop that you would think, you know, straight and narrow always and stuff like that. So they made his character, you know, more interesting as he went along.
I also found it interesting in this one, too, with the once Echo, keep saying Echo, Taffy, got remote wiped, the fact that Boyd isn't even brought in on this. He's not even aware until Topher goes, you know, around to let him know. And when he confronts, you know, Adele, you know, as she properly puts it, you know, hey, if there's anything you could have done, we'd let you know. So, I mean, I like how he gets a little cowboyish to go out there to try to help in the situation. Still, you know, showing his affinity for Echo at this point.
Well, and it also shows Adele acknowledging his affinity, too. So, I mean, when it, you know, it's at the end, it's like, no, send in a couple other people. He's not going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I say part of that relationship there that's developing is interesting as we're starting to build the universe still, you know, four episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely helps further Adele's character, too, just as being that, you know, she is the leader of that dollhouse and she does make all the decisions. I know Ambrose and things are higher up that you'll see later, but as far as what happens in that house, everything goes through Adele.
And I think this was the first official episode, first aired episode that we actually saw that she did answer to somebody else. When she gets the call and is, yes, sir, we're working on it, you know, we're going to get it taken care of. And I think that, if I remember correctly, that was the first time that I remember thinking, oh, she's not the queen bee of all this. She does answer to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, but also just by the tone of the conversation, how literally the person you know, hangs up on her while she's still like mid-sentence on something.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, you know, respect side of it is she just blurts out something to make it sound like the conversation ended on a good note since she's got the client in the room.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting, very much. I mean, again, it was just very intriguing first time through to see the whole concept very much of the remote wipe and how Topher and Adele deal with it and realize who did it.
Yeah, obviously. I like Topher totally calling her out on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I love, naturally, his total, you know, being Topher the spaz and paranoia to when she hands him the piece of paper thinking he's been fired.
I'm scared like a little girl. <It's all here.
laughs> Yeah, I mean, I do recall my first time through, I did not like Topher. I mean, he annoyed the heck out of me, which he was supposed to do. But I mean, I remember thinking, oh, this guy's just so annoying. So, I mean, this did start to humanize him a bit. But the whole idea that he had figured it out and that Adele literally has to have him sign a form for security reasons with what she's going to tell him. I mean, that's what made the bigger picture now very cool, the whole idea of Alf still out there and him being able to do this. And the fact that he needed to get a higher security grade to even know that was true.
I think I liked his explanation of the dollhouse in this episode when he said, you know, after Echo had been remote wiped, and he was basically saying what it was like and, you know, fluorescent lights and forceps, again, going back to that birth scenario, and then versus inside the dollhouse where the lettuce is perfectly crunchy and there's throw pillows everywhere and things. So I thought that did good at kind of explaining why it's like this big spa where they do yoga all the time and keep all the actives calm. And
I'm sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jen.
It does. It's kind of one of those things, I think, like when you're first watching it, it's like, why are they in like Wolfram and Hart, the spa version? But that does really kind of explain, it's the idea of that, you know, this is all fresh and new to them every time. And it's the idea of we're keeping them serene, we're keeping them calm, crunchy lettuce, yada, yada. I did love the crunchy lettuce.
I did. I love that quote. Throw pillows and perfectly crunchy lettuce.
Yes.
And then you'll see in season two, you'll see Bennett explain how different their dollhouse is as far as, you know, there's like free range chickens and and you know how they keep theirs very differently.
Yeah, but I also think too, it's a good, especially this early in the series, it's an attempt very much to show the audience just how blank or empty the dolls are. We you know, everybody thinks, or at least I think a lot of people when we were having conversations about this concept of, oh, cool, imprintable personalities, but they still felt like you were still someone when you were wiped. And this is just driving home the point of how, no, and we see it so perfectly with Taffy / Echo inside the vault. They aren't even a child. Even a child could have some more reasoning power than the dolls.
Yeah, I loved her looking at the paintings and, you know, noticing that they were broken and likening that to her own self.
Yeah, and the conversation with her and the stab tech guy, and I loved his you know, how he kind of caught on quickly enough how she had been reduced mentally to that of a child, and the way he almost kind of would describe things to her in a way to try and make her understand. It was one of those things that seems like, I don't know, it just shows what kind of character he is, what kind of person he was, that even all said and done, he was still trying to help her out in some way. And I think my favorite line from him, when, you know, says something about going to prison, and he says, prison is a place with no sky. And I love the idea behind that, because we know the dollhouse is deep underground, and it's, you know, it's kind of almost a nice parallel there that,
oh, wow,
she's still in a prison, just one with crunchy lettuce.
You know, I've never thought about it that way. My mind just always went to her blue skies statement. So that's, I didn't go much past it, but that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
very good point, Jen.
Yes.
Thanks. I try every once in a while. And then I have to piggyback on that. I want to know which version of Taffy anywhere in the world would actually think those were comfortable shoes. Just saying.
I never thought about that either. Again, I enjoy the leather.
I was going to say, she's wearing shoes?
Yeah, exactly. When did that happen?
Yes, there we have. We have Jen to balance us off. That's good.
Ladies, are you with me? That's all I got to say.
It's a fun episode on a rewatch. They like we said, some of the introductions of Ivy and some other things are kind of cool, but it is very much, or I don't know about you guys, but for me, certainly after finishing this one and getting into our discussion, I'm starting to like rub my hands together because it's like we're almost getting to the really good parts.
Yeah.
Exactly.
we're earning our stripes by getting through these earlier season one episodes, but it doesn't mean we can't have some good fun with them.
Oh yeah.
It's just like these are great, but we're almost there. We're almost a man on the street.
Very true. Any other points to cover before we touch on some feedback, gang?
I think that's it.
Well, we appreciate, as we always do, we're asking you folks for feedback and thoughts to cover on. We've got an email and also several excellent comments in the Facebook group that we wanted to make sure to kind of touch on. And again, we've got, if you're on Facebook, if you want to do a search on Active Architecture, you should be able to find us. You can join in the group there. We try to, you know, let you know when the episodes are released. There's some Dollhouse general discussions. And also, we try, at least a few days before we record, throw out a thread if you got any specific comments on an episode to let us know so we can kind of look through them here. So let me just kind of skim the Facebook group on some points that folks want to make sure we talked about. We had some similar things mentioned as far as the idea of a doll getting imprinted with the same imprint on that and how interesting it is. We also had a pretty good discussion going about the song choice at the end of the episode. Myself and Bob DeGrand, one of our listeners, are big fans of The Pretenders, and that song was made famous, well, not done first by, but made famous by them. So that was pretty cool, actually, there. I got a real kick out of it the first time I heard it in the episode.
Oh, very nice. I'd never heard the song.
Yeah, I hadn't either, but I did very much like it, and now that I know it's a Pretender song, I'm going, how did I not know that?
Exactly.
Well, Bob and I are just showing our age, because, you know, we were going to see the Pretenders live back in, like, 1980-ish. Boy, some of you were even born, so.
I do know who they are. I have some of their songs, but okay. I did not know this song existed. And I have not seen them live.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, again, Tammy was mentioning in the Facebook group, too, about the whole idea of getting more hints about Echo
whole I'm not broken line.
Yes, exactly. Love. Some good stuff there.
Go ahead,
Jen.
I love the comment from, I think it was Jen Hobbit Fairy. Made a comment about, did anyone else think that Echo was really attacked in the hotel? And she makes a great point. She says here, freak me the hell out, and also made me wonder why it took 4 episodes for the subject to be raised. And it is a good point. Especially that a lot of these dolls are going out on, usually romantic engagements. I do remember the first time watching that thinking, oh, what, is Boyd going to, you know, cowboy in or what, you know, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, I have a huge comment about this, and I think it's explored perfectly in Man on the Street. I think with the duality of the two engagements that happen within that episode, or the two main storyline, the storyline with Echo and the storyline with Sierra, and I think it's explored perfectly in that episode. And so, great comment.
Yeah, and we also had Marcus mentioning that this was the first time where the outside world actually could seem more evil than the dollhouse a bit, as we're seeing that balance between their very closed-in protective space and what can happen out there. So it was a good balance of giving us that better understanding so we don't make too many assumptions about what the dolls are really like.
And I remember that kind of starting at this point. And I know there's more times throughout, I couldn't pick one out specifically now, but there are more times as we go through the series where we start to see the dollhouse being maybe not quite the, you know, pure evil that was presented.
Yes.
But it can be a lot worse.
And I don't know if I want to read too much into it, but again, the title, gray hour, the whole idea of gray. I mean, we're seeing that there are a lot more shades of gray when it comes to dollhouse and engagements and the people in it, too.
That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Point for Kevin.
It's rare when I'm good. When I'm not talking about leather outfits, I'm good. Okay. So, yeah, no, those are some great comments there and some other ones. So, again, we do greatly appreciate that, folks. Feel free to throw them in there as we're getting the different episodes. I mean, obviously, we get some more top-notch episodes. I suspect the threads will explode with thoughts. But, you know, keep them coming. Gives us some things to touch on and sometimes also some great stuff to make sure that we do talk about. Now, speaking of things to talk about, too, we also got a great email. I think it was just after we recorded our last episode. One of our regular listeners and someone who will probably be guest hosting with us in the future, one of our listeners, Angie. Angie's co-host over on the at the Hellmouth Empire, Hellmouth Empire, doing the Buffy and Angel podcasts over there. But let me read her email, and then we can touch on it. Let me paraphrase a little beginning. She mentioned how she's rewatching along with us and that she's even recruited another Whedon fan to watch it for the very first time. So she's obviously can't have them listening to the podcast.
Why not?
Can't use it for some discussion points. But no, her question that she brought up for us was that she said, quote, "I write to you today about my favorite character at this point in the series, Boyd. I love the relationship between Boyd and Echo and how he seems to truly care for her more after each engagement. So I wonder what you all think of Boyd. Is he mentally ill? Are his feelings towards Echo for real, or is it just part of the elaborate illusion he's creating?"
I think Boyd is a little bit nutty, but I think in all, I mean, and you see this in the last episode that he's in, which I forgot the name of at this point, but in that last episode, you see that he really loves this group of people. He wants truly to protect Echo. And it, as long as it's working for his agenda. And I don't know. I think he really does truly care for Echo. I think in the beginning, like if we're truly looking at it as a complete series, I think in the beginning when he's pretending not to like her, I think that has to be pretend if you take into account season two. But I think truly, as it goes, he really is there to protect her, to watch over. Granted, it's for his own selfish needs. It's not necessarily for Echo. It's for her Medichlorians. But it is. But he is trying to protect her in a sense.
And yeah, that's actually a really good point. I'm actually reading right now inside the Dollhouse, one of the PopSmart books, and I actually, the article I read last night was very timely in discussing family and, you know, how Joss's shows always talk about family and how Boyd, I think it's The Hollow Men is the last episode, and how he is talking about how they're all his family and how he's like so far off the target because, you know, in Joss's world, family is who you choose. And even though he's chosen them, they haven't chosen him. And, you know, I mean, I think Adele says it best, and I still use this like as often as I can. You are spectacularly insane. but it does, you know, does merit some thought. You know, is he mentally ill? I mean, he's off his rocker. I mean, that I don't think there's any two ways about that. But I do think in a sense for him, because I think he is a little bit of a sociopath and therefore, you know, because he's following Echo and protecting Echo for part of his needs, that's kind of the core ideal behind a sociopath, that it's all about him. But for him, it is truly some sort of affection.
In my compartmentalized brain, because we know that the whole Boyd's a bad guy didn't come up until early season two from a writer's point of view. When it comes to season one, I can't retroactively say, well, he was, you know, making believe or just playing the part. I very much, in a weird kind of way, I look at what happens between season one and two of Dollhouse a bit like, and I'm going to bring my Buffy analogy in here, it's a bit like the summer break between years in school, a lot can happen on that break. And that's when I'm thinking Boyd lost it. He snapped. So I think of season one Boyd as a good guy. I think he truly cared. You know, he was the I don't know if we ever know exactly, but he was the law enforcement person, a cop or something before he, you know, ended up doing something he probably shouldn't have, which is why he ended up needing a job like the dollhouse. So he was a little, I don't know if you want to say bitter or, you know, not looking at things from the positive side when he came in there. And I think the Echo character very much softened him and saw that he, or helped him see that, you know, you can do things for better reasons. So that's the way I look at season one Boyd, very honestly. So I'm seeing him more as the good guy all up through the end of this season.
You've got your own little side story going there. Like, you really concocted this whole thing. It's pretty good.
I like Kevin's world.
Exactly. The Boyd in your world is much better. He makes more sense.
And it doesn't pass any litmus test for being able to say that it's in any way congruent with the series. But I am right now wearing my blinders and going, la, 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 Boyd's a good guy, la, 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 you know.
In your head it works, and that's what matters.
In my head it works, because I cannot retroactively go back and watch the beginning of this series and in any way think Boyd's a bad guy. I just can't. I can't accept that.
No, see, that's where my brain just goes crazy and thinks, like, it's going 90-nothing thinking, no, I don't like him, but I do like him. But no, I don't like him because he's evil. And so
wrapped up in the episode, and I'm like, oh boy, I just wanted to kick you in the head. You're such a, oh yeah.
You're like, bastard.
But I do like, I mean, the thing that's cool about him, too, again, is after we saw in Human Target? The episode with Echo out on the mountain getting hunted.
Mm-hmm.
When he captures that guy who was trying to kill him and shoots him in the leg to get the information he wants. And then in this one, when the art guy's trying to run away and he's basically telling him, no, I'm not going to kill you, or, you know, because I can catch you. But if I have to, I mean, he is so matter of fact. He does have that edge of the bad guy sociopath there, but he's also just very on point to that he's going to do what he needs to do to get the job done. You have what I want. I'm going to get it from you. If you try to run away, I'll just shoot you in the leg. No, he's not going to just randomly fire and kill someone. So he's smart enough and skilled enough that you do have to wonder a little bit about his background. You know, we never really get to go there.
Yeah, and I do recall, I think, because they've set everything up at this point, you know, okay, Boyd is a former cop, and they keep alluding to the cop thing, and there's a cop history. And I do remember kind of thinking at this point, if he was a dirty cop, or if he was, you know, a cleaner or something, you know, or maybe he was a cop at one point and then he got sucked into something else and now he's in the dollhouse trying to, like, you know, hide. But yeah, I do know that was kind of the point. I was like, okay, well, he obviously has a thing for kneecaps. He's apparently gone to the school at Shepherd Book.
Well, you know, if he works at the dollhouse, there's got to be something a little dark and twisty with him. Because, I mean, it's the dollhouse. It's not exactly, you know, Sesame Street. So, but I think all, look, I was just trying to think of something bright and happy. Is Sesame Street bright and happy? I don't know. I would say Barney, but I watched it with my nephew the other day, and it's a little creepy. But all these things make me want to, like, go to Man on the Street, because I think this is going to be a great episode to talk about, just because, again, you see what Boyd does for Sierra. And how he protects Sierra in that episode. And again, it just makes his character really interesting to try to... again, you're going to have to figure out your own way to think about him, obviously, with how the series ends. So I think that's just going to be a... Yeah. You're just going to have to figure out your own way around it, whether you try to make sense of it all like I do, or whether you create this huge side story like Kevin, or whatever you do, you just... you know, I think it's to each his own, I guess.
Yeah, and I bet some of you out there listening have your own crazy stories that you do that make this work. Come on now, I can't be the only crazy one.
Well, please send them to us.
Yes, please, please. Post them to the Facebook group.
Post to the Facebook group. Now there's our email address. Don't forget our email. Get in touch with us. ActiveArchitecture@gmail.com. Spin your theories.
Yes, active. Also, Twitter, our dolls active. It's been a little lonely. Not many of you have tweeted at us there.
Your theories in 140 characters. Or
exactly. That's what I was about to say. It's kind of hard to spin Dollhouse theories 140 characters. I mean, I know we get pretty crafty with this 140 character thing, but yeah, it's kind of hard to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Facebook is better for those crazy theories, but
if you're talented enough to do it in 140 characters, be our guest.
Yes, we are. Yeah. We are following. But no, any of those methods, folks, we love hearing from you folks and giving us some thoughts, either letting us know we're on the right track or just pointing and laughing. That's fine, too, because that's part of the fun. So I think that's probably just about going to wrap us up for this time. Like I said, we're all getting very excited as we're starting to get to the real meat of the series. And it's also going to be a lot of fun having regular guest co-hosts. Many of you expressed interest in that. So it's going to be good having some other voices to bounce some things off going forward.
Can't wait. We need to come up with something good for the final of the Fox 5. Try saying that 3 times fast.
It took my brain about 30 seconds to process what you said. Forget saying it. I can't even comprehend it.
Oh, okay. Well, I think on that note, we'd stick a fork in it. I think we're pretty much done.
Awesome.
Thank
appreciate
you
all listening. Thanks.
Till the day I die.